So money and markets, Ukraine is the top story globally this week. And it, you know, think of the old watchword when you talk about real estate, it's all about location, location, location. And if you look at the Ukraine, its strategic location between Russia, China, the warm water ports of the Black Sea, and Europe is very, very important. It's one of the great breadbaskets of the world. That breadbasket was harmed by the Chernobyl incident in the 80s. But it's one of the great breadbaskets of the world. It's also a transportation point for a lot of oil and gas. The Russian state-controlled company sells about 160 billion cubic meters of natural gas to Europe every year. That's about 25% of the European demand. Half of that travels through the Ukraine pipelines. The Brzezinski wrote a book published in the late 90s called The Grand Chessboard and describes sort of the next struggle as the struggle for Eurasia. It's a very good description, and of course, Ukraine is right in the middle of it. Last November, the Ukraine, at the last minute, refused to sign an EU association agreement that would have drawn the Ukraine closer to the European Union. The Russians were very opposed, Putin wanting to draw them into his Eastern European Trade Association. In December, they then signed a treaty of cooperation with the Chinese. So, of course, the U.S. became stronger and stronger in terms of the soft weapons they were applying in the midst of all of this. And so you sort of have the EU and the U.S. lined up and dancing vis-a-vis the Russians and the Chinese. And, of course, you know, it's just too much attention for 44 million people of the Ukraine. Charles Hugh Smith wrote a great piece. It's up on the blog about the use of soft weapons by the Americans and how not to underestimate those. Yes, the Russians are right next door and can use their navy to block the Ukraines and to prop down in the Crimea. At the same time, the American soft weapons in this situation are formidable. And another great benefit of the Snowden revelations, of course, Snowden being up in Moscow, supposedly, is that we can start to now understand those soft weapons, but Ukraine will be a place where we can watch them applied with fury. And it's really worth understanding them in that context, because once you see them in another place, this clearly you can start to understand how they are applied in the United States as well. One of the tactics that Smith mentions is the fact that many Russian officials have offshore accounts, and with our sort of attacking and asserting control of the offshore accounts, what we can do vis-a-vis their offshore accounts and threatening their offshore accounts. And he gives some very good examples of the kind of soft weapons that could be play. Just as background, one thing to understand is that in the beginning of the 90s, Russia, Poland, and the Ukraine all had approximately $5,000 to $6,000 per person GDP on average. Poland and Russia have increased their per-person GDP about 400%. The Ukraine is not. They're just up a little bit, say 7,000. So they have not kept up with their neighbors, and they have not kept up with inflation. And you wonder why, given the importance of their location and the resources they have. I suspect one of the reasons is Chernobyl. Having an event like that in the 80s could be very detrimental to a lot of your economic activity for obvious reasons. The rape of Russia and what happened with U.S. intelligence interests moving into Russia and kind of raping the place could certainly have reverberated into Ukraine. 2 days ago, their bonds were yielding 46%. What that means is they're shut out of the financial markets. And that's part of what happens when you want to force somebody to sell their assets. And of course, literally at the same time, it's announced that they are contemplating privatizing their oil and gas assets. They have a lot of other valuable assets, of course, including the farmland. This is how disaster capitalism works. I posted in the commentary on the Ukraine some of the links for example, Naomi Klein's book, Shock Doctrine. But essentially what we're going to see now is the private investment syndicates and large companies, whether Russian, European, or U.S., are going to start winning and picking up assets, and how this dance is going to go I think it's very fluid, and we'll just have to see how it evolves. There's oil and gas at stake, as I said, farmland, the Black Sea ports, which the Russians have absolute strategic interests. There's no way they're going to let those go. You have steel as well. All of these are in play. And, of course, the private interests will win, and the taxpayers, Russian and American and EU, will pay the cost of having the fight, and the Ukraine people will lose and pay mightily. The U.S. markets are up, and the Russian stock market is way down. So, if anything, the markets are really sort of demanding the fight, but at the same time, they're tempering it, too, because to the extent that the Russians and the Americans and the EU get played off against each other, the market won't tolerate a fight that's bad for the markets, because ultimately what this is about is what's good for the investors, whether we like it or not. There's now a proposal said to be from the Russians to the IMF, insisting that the IMF proceed without a U.S. veto. The Congress has refused to support changes at the IMF going forward. I posted the article up on the blog. You can see the details. So this sort of squabble is going to fight out or move out to the G7. Expect this to continue to happen in other places. Again, as the more powerful centralized systems keep looking to eat up more and more assets of those places that can't translate them into the market valuations that the other centralized systems can. The brutality of the game has upset more than a few commentators. We see Paul Craig Roberts publishing articles called "The End Is Near." I hate to say this, this is disaster capitalism has been playing out for decades now. And unfortunately, as I said, the big problem is it shrinks wealth in the interests of centralizing it. And so it doesn't feel like market or laws. It feels like mob wars for now. If you haven't seen the movie, George Clooney's movie, Syriana, I would really recommend you watch it, because it does a good job of sort of describing the dance between the Russians, the Chinese, and the Americans, in that case in the Middle East, but it's spread to Eurasia now. Back stateside, as I said, unemployment is much greater than many sort of commentators were saying they expected. Certainly not more than we expected here on the Solaria Report, and anger is growing. And as I said, this is going to make the elections in November much more serious than the usual congressional cycle. Article up on the blog. There's lots to be angry about. The 26 top American corporations paid no federal income tax from 2008 to 2012. We're sure that contributed to earnings holding up the Standard & Poor's index. One of the funniest developments is allegations flying back between the CIA and the House Intelligence Committee. Apparently, they're accusing the CIA of being snooping on congressional intelligence staffers. Surprise, surprise. Anyway, this is what I call the Midianite thing. For those of you who've never heard me use the expression, it's a reference to the story of Gideon in the Old Testament, where Gideon is asked by an angel of the Lord to throw the Midianites out of Israel, the Midianites being evil-doing, horrible people. And what happens is the Midianites end up jumping up in the dark and killing each other. And we're watching more and more of the Midianite thing happening. Part of the squabble in the Ukraine is the centralized systems are absolutely doing the Midianite thing. But we're seeing it all over the place. We're seeing it certainly in Congress. And I think the more and more revelations that come out from all sorts of things, it's part of the nature of the online world, the more you're going to see the Midianite thing happening. So keep watching for it. The problem Congress has is that unemployment calls for serious reengineering. If you're really going to deal with the unemployment issue, you have to go at this at a much deeper and more structural level. And to do it, you need support from the Black Budget Group, because part of the problem is you've got very unsustainable economics. You keep harvesting the system and that harvest goes out but doesn't invest in something that produces a sort of economic yield back. So it's back to the tapeworm and the drain. So the question is, how are you going to get the Black budget forces and constituencies to help re-engineer to something that's positive If you've ever seen Charlie Ferguson's documentary on Iraq, No End in Sight, you know, that group tends not to be into reengineering in a wealth-building way, but engineering in the let's wreck everything and then it'll be easier to control it way. It's what inspired my article, The American Tapeworm, as I said, that I wrote in 2003, about centralizing wealth in a manner that reduces the overall returns in the ecosystem. Speaking of the tapeworm, Warren Buffett apparently likes my stuff because he keeps using the expression financial tapeworm in attacking the public pension funds he did in his new shareholder report. He called them a financial tapeworm, which I don't agree with. But I bring that up to say that the attacking of the system on the public pension funds, the war continues to get more and more verbose. There are a lot of players who want control of that capital. It's still a very rich pot of capital and one that creates a lot of strength on the ground in the broad middle class. So if you want to control, the problem is, you know, it gives too many people too much financial security. Not to say that there aren't some problems with the public pensions, mostly on the healthcare side, not so much on the retirement benefit side. There are endless limited hangouts going back and forth, but every once in a while you get some very excellent writing about why the attacks are absolutely not grounded in sound reality or facts. And I put one up this week, The Anti-Pension Billionaire Shows the 5 Rules of Deceptive Native Advertising. So it was a very good piece on the sort of dirty tactics of the let's go get the public pension fund crowd. There's a lot to say about the employment issue, and I want to start talking about it some more on the Solari Report. So we're going to have John Williams from Shadow Stats in 2 weeks, so I'll defer until that time. And, of course, we won't begin to complete the employment issue with that one Solari Report because, as I said, this is a major and deep structural issue, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. There are stories of disruptive technology everywhere. I keep putting them up on the blog. It's hard to keep up with them. A great one this week was about Alipay, which is an arm of Alibaba, and what Jack Ma, the founder of Alibaba, is doing to the Chinese banking system. It's called High Interest Web Banks on the Rise in China. And sometimes it's easier to see that disruptive technology working on the other side of the world than in your own society. The other one, also up on the blog, is Kickstarter passed $1 billion in pledges recently. And so they sent out some very interesting material celebrating that fact. And I think it's fantastic because essentially what they're saying is, okay, you the SEC, you the federal regulators, you the whole financial system, you make it impossible for the little guy to finance equity in each other's small businesses and startups. No problem. We just won't even bother with ownership interest. We'll just start giving each other our money. And we'll build equity, you know, completely by the pay it forward method. And sure enough, we got $1 billion flying between people. And I've participated in a couple of Kickstarter projects and some other crowdfunding that are not on Kickstarter. There's a lovely new one on just science and engineering projects, and I just posted that up on the blog. The Bitcoin story evolves. Newsweek claims to have found the inventor, who is an LA former defense contractor with a very impressive resume. And of course, the market is reverberating from the latest round of hackings. It's interesting because I was yet again stunned by much of this early support for Bitcoin. Because I think that if you've never been involved in a very significant way in financial transactions, particularly very large financial transactions, it's very hard to understand what is involved in creating integrity and the extraordinary efforts that are required to create integrity within a payment transaction system. The number of things that can go wrong, particularly in a world of economic warfare, I'm reminded of the wonderful song from the gospel tune, and where he says, "You're playing with the big boys now." Well, a lot of the people who thought, you know, that running a Bitcoin exchange was just something you could get together and do, and you wouldn't have the most powerful forces in the world playing around with you for a variety of reasons. I think they know differently now. We even have a report of the CEO of one exchange in Singapore said to commit suicide. Who knows what happened, but that story's up on the blog. Bringing integrity to a financial and transaction system is much, much harder than, as I said, most folks imagine. And so it's very important, before you poo-poo the American financial system, we need to remember that even though it's had many failures and it is very misused, particularly since the black budget got going, it has also had many successes as well. And we need to certainly take the good before we just say, oh, it's, you know, it's all fraudulent. Unfortunately, what I've found is that many of the big financial institutions I can trust a lot more than I can trust with most of my neighbors in terms of financial integrity and transaction integrity. That's a sad state of affairs, but part of what we need to do if we're going to come up with real solutions is we need to learn how to create and maintain transactional integrity just with each other and away from the big financial institutions. Markets. Gold and silver have started to peak up a little bit. Silver was, which has lagged behind gold, is peaking up. Now that just takes it back to where it was in the fall. And of course, we're in what should be the strong time of the year. Commodities peaking up. So I was very excited to be able to interview Don Cox that this week. That interview is up on the blog. Terrific interview. Terrific guy. Cox is always insightful and lively. He's one of my favorite commentators, certainly on commodities. The S&P continues to hit new highs, as I said. The ducks are squawking and the politicians absolutely want to feed them. There's even a little life in the emerging markets, and I think part of it is the commodities picking up is helping them, because many of the emerging markets are very tied to the commodities market and, of course, always what's happening with China. The big question we asked with Don Cox, of course, is where are the earnings going to come from? And of course, that brings us full circle to Ukraine and the brutal game of inspiring privatization by busting people's access to the capital and financial markets. Special report this week on the foreign financial reporting requirements of the U.S. Treasury for those of you who have offshore bank accounts or something like a gold money account. It's very, very important to be aware of that report, and that special report is up on the blog for subscribers. Nothing material has changed this year, but the manner in which it's a different form, different filing process, so you just want to look into the nuts and bolts of that. That report is up on the blog. And a very interesting Financial Times copycat article that's posted up on the blog, The New Market Space, Billionaire Investors Look Beyond Earth, and it reads remarkably like our annual wrap-up. The symmetry is inexplicable.